The following is Dan Perkins' appearance on Ken Lovejoy's Charlotte County Speaks radio show in Southwest Florida.
Good morning, old friends.
Oh, my God, what time is it?
What time is it?
The time has come to hit unfriend.
Oh, my God, is it time? Is it time?
You're getting dangerously close to being unfriended.
Really?
Why?
Today is National Unfriend Day on Facebook.
Easy, friend.
We're not friends.
Did you just unfriend me?
Unfollow.
We were Facebook friends before there was a Facebook.
And unfriend.
It's showtime.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is Charlotte County Speaks, your chance to let your voice be heard on local, state, and national issues. And now, broadcasting live from a dumpy little warehouse behind a Taco Bell, the host of Charlotte County Speaks, Ken Lovejoy.
Thank you, Johnny. News Radio 1580, 100.9 FM, WCCFradio.com, and on your iHeartRadio app. Charlotte County Speaks on the air at 11 minutes after 10 a.m. on this Monday morning. Phone lines are 941-206-1580, which is where we're heading right now to talk shop with Dan Perkins. Dan, how's your weekend, my friend?
Good morning, sir. I am. I'm fine, thank you. And yourself? Did you have a good weekend?
Oh, yeah. Nice and easy. Nice and quiet.
Okay.
Not too busy.
Buckeyes won again.
Yes!
My hometown team.
That's why they're number one.
So, they're still number one, and they've been number one literally from the first kickoff.
Pretty much, yeah.
The whole season.
The whole season they have. That's for sure.
All right. And we're all marching towards... we're going to forget about Rutgers this weekend and move into... the maize and blue of Michigan on Saturday after Thanksgiving. So it will be an interesting game. Interesting game. Because
yeah,
Michigan
wasn't so hot this weekend. I mean, you know.
Yeah. Right.
They but it should be a good game. Because it doesn't. Yep. That's the one thing about some of these college rivalries. It doesn't matter how good or bad of a season they are. They could wind up slaying, whoever they're playing. You know, when it's a Michigan and Ohio, you can't, just because Michigan's having a lousy season doesn't mean they won't win, you know?
Emotion plays in it. That's one of the things that I love about college football.
Yeah.
Is that exactly what you just said, is that on any given Sunday or Saturday, unranked team can knock off a ranked team. And there's no excuse for it except for one thing, and that's emotion.
Yep.
I think that some coaches have the ability to get their players so psychologically pumped that they play way above their pay grade, and sometimes slew the dragon. But sometimes the dragon slew them too. But it'll be interesting to see what happens, because if the Big Ten, which I wonder if they're ever going to change it, because it's more of the 10 colleges
yeah.
now. It's possible that we could have, as we had at the beginning of the season, we had Ohio State number one, and Texas, as you know, was number two. We had number one and number two playing. It's possible that in the Big Ten championship game, we could have, very realistically, the number one and number two teams in the nation playing, Ohio State and
Indiana. Yeah.
Yeah, because that's number two. And they're both would be undefeated, so... Probably the team that wins will go on to a bowl game and probably win the national championship.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's always fun to watch the Buckeyes play.
I love watching college ball more than the pros these days. Definitely.
I've been doing that for years. As I said, the college games, especially the as you said, the season ending games are the most exciting to watch and where the greatest amount of surprises can happen. Mm-hmm. And, that's what I love about college football. I used to go, when we lived in New Jersey, we lived in a town called Chatham, very small town. And next door to us was a school called Drew University. Moderate sized school, had probably a AAA team as far as football. But I used to go watch the games because you never knew when who they were all playing people about the same caliber as they were. So you never knew what was going to happen to those games. And they're always entertaining because there was always a surprise or some amazing play or And so I used to go sit and watch college games. I've been to a few pro games, but not nearly as many as I have college games.
Yeah. Cool. It's going to be fun.
Let's talk about the ugly stuff.
Okay.
The global warming people are having a conference in Brazil. And they decided to cut down 100,000 trees in the rainforest.
Yeah, they had to make a road.
The Amazon rainforest to build a highway.
Yeah.
So that to the 50,000 people who are supposedly coming to this conference on global warming can get to the conference center more easily.
Which tells you right there that global warming does not exist.
I've always believed that from the very beginning. It was a great hoax. I've done a lot of stories on the amount of money the world has spent on this hoax. And
have you got?
But they don't seem to give up. And Gavin Newsom is trying to finagle an invitation to go and speak to this conference because he needs to be more on the international scene if he wants to run for president in 2028.
He's going to get his ass kicked. It ain't going to happen. Do you have 2 minutes? I got 2 minutes. This is such a coincidence here. I just uploaded this audio this morning. A geology professor, Ian Plimer.
Oh, no. We're going to fry and die. We're warming. We've got global boiling. We've had the hottest summer. Well, my answer is, since when? Because since the time of Jesus, it's actually cooled. We've cooled about 5 degrees Celsius. Why did the Romans have scanty clothing? Why did they grow grapes up in Yorkshire? Why did they have olives up the Rhine River as far as Bonn? It was warmer. And then in Viking times, it was cooler. And we've warmed up since Viking times. And then in medieval times, it's actually since then we've cooled. And it was about 5 degrees Celsius warmer. Eric the Red was saying, come to Greenland. Fabulous pastures. They grew barley. They grew wheat. They had cattle. They had sheep. They could dig graves instead of having permafrost. It was much warmer 1,000 years ago. And then we entered the Little Ice Age. And it was colder, of course, extremely cold, when the sun got a bit lazy. And the last period the sun was lazy was 300-odd years ago, called the Maunder Minimum. And since the Little Ice Age ended, what do you think happened? Well, after the Little Ice Age, it's going to warm up, isn't it? And that's what's happened. We've been warming. So the real question is, which part of the modern warming is of human origin and which part is natural? Because we are not as warm as in medieval times or in Roman times or in Minoan times. And if you go back even further, looking at the ice cores, we oscillate in climate between when we're closer to the sun or when we're further away. These Milankovic cycles have been known for only 100 years, and we are at a period of time now when we're a little bit closer to the sun.
There it is. It's all cyclical.
Well, you know, I listened to it as best I could, and I keep wondering, why are they still... They told us, as you remember, Obama told us that leading scientists have indicated that we're in serious trouble with global warming.
Lies.
The scientific community agrees that global warming is a problem. Well,
lies.
The scientific community never agreed at that time.
No.
On a Ford document. And now the scientific community is not believing that we're in a global warming situation. But yet these people continue to push the agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Because
Why?
They're liars. Because they got money, they got power, and they want to wield it against we the people. And they need an excuse to be able to control us, so they use the climate as the excuse. And CO2 is the phantom menace, and it's all a bunch of lies.
That's true. But we had a situation within the last 10 days where Bill Gates, who was a major climate guy, said, you know, I don't think so anymore. We got more important issues than global warming. But what was interesting, did you see any pushback from the climate people when Gates said we've got more important issues than global warming?
No, because it's true. No, because they know it's true as well. They got to figure out. Because they're trying to do so much at the same time. They're trying to strip us of our rights and our freedom because of global warming. At the same time, they're building this AI super infrastructure for a total surveillance state, and they realize they need a boatload of power to be able to do that. So we can't really,
right.
we can't really, we got to, we need hydroelectric dams again. We got to build nuclear. So, you know, the whole grift of global warming has gone out the window.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And if you recall, we talked about a couple of weeks ago, Facebook bought an entire power plant.
Yeah,
from out of commercial service to meet their needs in order for electricity to run their artificial intelligence. And as we continue to expand the artificial intelligence platform, we have increasing demands for power, and solar and wind aren't going to be able to
not even
meet
close.
The capacity needs.
Not even.
And
close.
So there, but there, so there, the scientists are in conflict. The AI guys who are trying to develop this technology need the power, and the climate change people don't want to give them the power because they don't want to lose their power. So it's really very significant conflict. It reminds me of the same kind of conflict that we have over the Affordable Care Act, how the Democrats basically capitulated to open up the government when they realized there was no way that the Republicans were going to cave in and give them hundreds of billions of dollars to pay the premium.
It's their fault. It's their own fault. They're the ones.
Absolutely. They're the only ones who voted put this legislation in, and because they had control of the House and the Senate and the White House, they got it done because they didn't need any Republican votes to pass it to get it done.
But instead of making it permanent, now, they put a deadline on it.
Yeah, it's amazing if we look at, and I've said this, it's almost on blue in the face, but I'm going to keep saying it. What the American people have yet to realize and understand is that this program was built on lies that were never possible to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
We were never going to be, this program was never going to be in a position to let you keep your doctor, keep your plan, and give you $2,500 or more for a family back in savings.
Yeah.
And it never happened.
It was supposed to implode on itself to where the government could say, well, this just isn't working. We're going to have to go to government single payer, to where the government decides, not medical, and that's not going to work either.
Yeah, but you're right that they wanted to do that, but as the cost rose many times, inflation in terms of percentage, and the prices went up and up and up, they didn't want to change. Because they had the bureaucracy in place that was controlling healthcare for the American people, albeit an ever decreasing amount of people, they got hungry on the power that they were getting by this and wanted the money to be paid by the government. And the idea that, as again I said in a commentary I wrote recently, that what happened was Biden figured, well, how can we make Obamacare, which was floundering, more interesting to potential buyers? How about if we give it away for free, and the government will pay the premium? We'll give it away free, and we'll let the government pay the premium. So we created this enormous boondoggle, where the government was paying hundreds of billions of dollars in premium subsidies to people, and never did anything about the cash flow that was going to the insurance companies. And who were continually raising the premiums to astronomical levels. And I think the idea that Thune said that in the settlement conference for the shutdown, that he would bring Obamacare revisions to the floor for a vote, where the Speaker of the House said, absolutely not. We didn't agree to that. Not going to happen. And so it really is a... it's a situation where we can't go on and continue to pay the premium for people, especially the people who can afford it.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to get the premiums down. We need to change the whole healthcare system.
Well, yeah, we got to get government the hell out. government has destroyed our healthcare system.
Well, I agree with you, but my point was going to be that if Mr. Trump can figure out a way to get that done, I don't know the Nobel Peace Prize for it, but he should get that more than anything else.
Yeah.
Because if he solves the healthcare crisis in the United States so that people can get affordable healthcare when they need it, it would be a lifelong accomplishment that has been needed for a long, long time.
Indeed.
Now, the other thing that came out over the weekend is that, you know, you go figure on this one for me. For some reason, the crime rate in blue states and blue cities seems to be higher than the crime rate in red states and red cities. Can you figure that out?
Wow. Well, maybe not. Because I have some information here from DHS Assistant Secretary Tricia McLaughlin. Since the start of Operation Midway Blitz in Chicago, so they started sending the National Guard in, they sent ICE in there to read it. Homicides are down 16%, shootings are down 35%, robberies down 41%, carjackings down 48%, and transit crime down 20%. So Chicago might be rivaling a red city right now with those low numbers.
But that was all done in the face of a mayor who
didn't want it. Didn't
feel he needed any help.
Yep.
And a governor who thought that the ICE and federal agents were all Gestapo.
Yeah.
and he's unwilling to admit that there was change brought about by what Donald Trump did.
Oh, they can't. They can't admit
reality. Pardon?
They can't admit it.
No, they can't admit it. But I want to take you back in time and give you a similar situation. And that was over in Afghanistan when Petraeus brought out the surge. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And we had the American military become very aggressive and lots of attacks and lots of different fronts, and we basically demoralized and took the Taliban to task and turned the momentum in that war. This is what Trump is basically doing. He's flooding Petraeus did. He flooded the battlefield with huge numbers of people to go after the problem. He's doing this. Trump's doing the same thing by flooding these big cities with massive amounts of law enforcement.
And it works.
It does, but I'm terribly afraid that we're going to see more violence and more deadly violence as Antifa, the terrorist arm of the Democratic Party, gets more involved in this situation.
Well,
and
then
they
we
start
get,
killing ICE agents.
Well, then we get to eliminate Antifa. And that will be fun to watch. I would love to participate in that operation. Yeah, it's going to get violent. It will get violent because that's who they are. That's who the left has become. A bunch of violent psychos who can't govern anything and everything they touch turns to crap. So, yeah, be prepared for that because it's just going
to
happen.
Fear of physical violence reprisals to try and modify the actions of people.
It ain't going to happen.
Congressmen, senators, judges, and the American people.
Antifas thrive in blue cities. That's the only place they can survive. They can't survive elsewhere because they get the crap beaten out of them, as they should. So they can go ahead and talk all the crap they want. When push comes to shove, we'll bury them.
We're seeing more and more examples of attacks, killings and wounding of government officials and law enforcement people in these blue cities who are crazy about what's going on. And, you know, look, it was less than 30 days ago when the mayor of Boston was telling, we don't have a problem. And the last 30 days, Boston has had some of the serious problems and she doesn't know what to do about them.
No.
It's just amazing that we have, but it's becoming more and more evident that the problems of crime are a blue state, blue city problem more than anything else.
And the reason the problem is there's no law enforcement, because the cops aren't allowed to do their job, because most of these city cops have a police chief who's been appointed by the mayor or the city council, which means he's a blue schmuck who's going to do whatever they tell him to do. And so you've got a lot of cops who aren't allowed to be cops in blue cities, and that's why these vermin thrive and become emboldened, because they think that they have the power when they really don't. Because all it's going to take is a blue city mayor to say, I've had enough of this, cops take care of business, and they'll end it. But you've got too many. Portland, you've got the cops who are participating with Antifa, seem to be siding with Antifa. So so again, you're going to continue to see problems in those cities that have been taken over by a bunch of leftist vermin.
Yes, and I think it's going to get worse. Mm-hmm. And I think that we're headed for a confrontation in California and Illinois, where both governors are trying to get legislation passed that would allow the local police authorities to arrest ICE agents and other people,
which again
who are out there trying to defend government property and to deal with the issues,
which again isn't going to happen. It's not going to happen. They don't have the authority. They don't have the constitutional authority or the legal authority to do that. And if they do that, you are going to see problems. I don't think, I don't think it's going to be all cops that are going to, it's only going to be a few of those union douches that decide to get involved and try and arrest the DHS agent. I don't think you're going to see real cops act in that fashion.
I hope not. But, you know, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, the difference between chiefs of police and sheriffs, where the chiefs, 95% of the chiefs of police are political appointments, and almost 100% of the sheriffs are all elected by the people. There is a rift developing between the county sheriff and the chief of police in these big blue cities.
I would imagine
about what's happening.
Yeah.
And so I think that you have a situation where you have the big city police have become so, I'm going to create a word for you, bureaucratized, meaning they have become bureaucrats by association. They let the leadership of the union capitulate to the city council and the mayor, and the rank and file police officer is the one who pays the ultimate price of confusion as to what the hell he or she should do.
Yeah, it's true. That's why I've never agreed with police chiefs being appointed. I think they should be elected just like the sheriffs, and you're going to see a lot less of this crap happen in blue cities.
Well, the beauty of the sheriff not being a direct report of the mayor of a city, as you pointed out, the sheriff is elected by the people. He runs for office as sheriff. And so that the even the chief of police in a blue city doesn't have power over the sheriff. And if the sheriff believes that there's a problem that the existing law enforcement authority can't handle, he can come in and take over portions of law enforcement to make sure that the things are stable in the community. But it really is a situation where I'm going back to what I believe, and that is this level of crime that's developing in blue states and blue cities in red states is only accelerating and is continuing to accelerate up the ladder of concern of the American people. Right now, it's 81% of voters believe it's the number one issue coming up in the midterms. And it's going to go higher.
Oh, yeah, because it's going to get worse.
81, how can it go higher? But it's going to go higher. And so I think that law and order is still an issue in this country. And a lot of the people on the left, as we talked about, who are forgetting about whether or not we have global warming, they have an agenda and they want to do things, and they want to cut down the 100,000 trees in the rainforest to build a highway to go talk about global warming and protecting the environment. I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, you think about it. Wait a minute. What are these people doing?
They're mental.
There was a great cartoon on Fox News on Saturday. And there's a guy and a man and a woman in a living room, and he's got a gun, and he's got his arm around her neck, and she's crying, and she's beat up, and at the doorway is a woman who is not a police officer,
social worker,
but says the caption says, "Looks like somebody needs a hug."
Yeah. That's the new Mom-Dami police force, social workers.
Right.
Can't we just have a discussion? Can't we just talk?
Yes. Can we have some tea and cookies? But the point I want to make about that, I know we're running, and I apologize, that this issue is not just a New York City issue.
No.
We have socialists in Seattle, and there are other socialists who are running in the country to want to get mayorships, run for governors, and all these situations because the left wants to take over the government and take over and get rid of the police and create a situation where crime is just going to go crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, Seattle just elected a new mayor, and she's more brain dead than the previous mayor.
Right.
Good God. I mean, she's just a complete, total idiot. I don't understand how people in Seattle voted. My home state has just gone to hell in a handbasket, and I don't even like going back, to tell you the truth. If I didn't have family still there, I would never set foot in Washington State again.
Yeah, I understand. I have the same concerns about going back to New Jersey and New York. I mean, I have no interest in wanting to go back to New York by what he's going to do. And it's going to get ugly quick.
Yep, that's for sure. That's for sure.
All right, sir.
It's Thank Dan you. Perkins.
I'll talk to you before Thanksgiving, I guess. We're doing a show next Monday.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. I'll definitely be
here. All right, sir.
It's Dan Perkins, folks. Okay. DanPerkinsMedia.org. DanPerkinsMedia.org. Check him out. And we'll talk to you again next week, Dan. Thanks.
Here's a quick secret about today's show. They're making toast down the hall. Ever notice toasters are like the radio? You turn them on and they work. No pesky upgrades needed. Sometimes you have to shake out the crumbs. And that goes for the toaster, too. Mmm, that wonderful smell of toast. Oh, enjoy the show.
We'll be right back with Charlotte County Speaks on News Radio 1580 WCCF.
Perkins, the author of Sad Eyes Book 2. In Book 1, we watch her grow up and develop into an intelligent, practical, and beautiful woman. She knows what she wants to be, and she will not let anything happen that will stop her from reaching her goal. Book 2 has many challenges she faces during World War II. People say it's hard to put down. You can get Sad Eyes Book 2 at Amazon.com or JanCarrollPublishing.com and ask at Jan Carroll for a special deal if you buy both books.
Hello, and welcome to Dan Perkins Media. Here is his recent appearance on the Dove Network.
Well, welcome to Focus Today. I'm your host, Perry Atkinson. Delighted to have back. It's been a while. Always an honor when we have time to sit down with Dan Perkins. He's a political commentator, host of What's on My Mind podcast, and he is a author of historical romance novels entitled Sad Eyes. There's a picture of the cover of the book there on the screen, available online. Dan has a couple of places you can connect with him, danperkins.guru. And then he has a wonderful outreach to veterans, songsandstoriesforsoldiers.us. And let me encourage you to check that out and support what he does in helping our veterans get through some very tough times. There he is, Dan Perkins, as I speak.
Yes, it is me.
How you doing? How you doing, buddy? Good to see you.
Busy. We'll have to talk later.
There we go. Yeah. Well, a lot to talk about. The Saudi prince comes to town, pretty interesting. Went from $600 billion to a trillion offering investment. Do you know what this is for?
Whatever Mr. Trump wants.
Well, I know that, but I mean, he's going to invest $1 trillion in what?
America, the opportunity.
But
see, what people don't understand, the Democrats are saying Trump's spending way too much time on foreign policy. Wow. He needs to focus on domestic policy. What they don't understand, that meetings like with the Saudi prince and other nations that are giving us trillions of dollars in foreign policy discussions are also good for our economy. So when he sits with the Saudi prince and gets him from 600 billion to a trillion, there's a lot of things he wants to do. He wants to diversify his economy and his investment portfolio, and he wants to be in the United States. As to what specific he wants to do with the extra 300 billion, I haven't read anybody said what he wants to do with it. It's just that he wants to make a commitment to America.
Okay. How does this play out geopolitically in the Middle East, where the Saudis now may come into the Abraham Accord? How significant is that?
Oh, we don't have enough time in this program to talk about how significant it is.
Yeah.
What you're talking about is one of the richest nations of the world who wants to make peace with Israel and wants to develop its economy to diversify it away from energy. Energy is a huge contributor to the Saudi economy and to the treasury. And as Saudi Arabia goes, and you start to stimulate trade in the Middle East, terrorism is going to decline dramatically.
How does courting Saudi Arabia, which, by the way, the people who attacked us on 9/11 were from Saudi Arabia, how does courting Saudi Arabia help with managing Iran?
Oil. Oil is the answer to your question. Most people don't know this fact about Iran at the moment. Their people are running out of water. They've had a drought of biblical proportions, and the water supplies are rapidly diminishing, so that people do not have water in their homes. They have to carry buckets. The people are becoming more and more frustrated with the government. Now, there are people who say that there is water there. We need to take that drilling expertise for oil and use it to finding water underground. Where the great aquifer is in the mountains, which the Iranian government doesn't have much control over. And I'm not sure that they're ready to go sacrifice people's lives to try and drill for water in the mountains. So that economy is rapidly declining because we're drilling more, shipping more. We're starting to take market share away from both Russia and Iran. And Saudi Arabia becomes the catalyst to provide oil where Iran is being taken off the marketplace.
All right. Couple of other quick questions here, and that is, why hasn't the president spent more time on bringing all energy prices down?
Well, what we found out, fascinating story. One of the biggest, most vocal supporters of global warming was Bill Gates.
Yes.
He did a 180. And he did it not because of altruistic means. He did it because he wants to have a spot to be a significant player in the evolution and development and distribution of artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence takes a huge amount of electrical power to be successful. You've got to feed these computers millions of kilowatts of electricity. He's realized we can't get that from wind and solar. So he's thinking in terms of We have to find ways to generate energy in the United States, and that means natural gas, oil, and nuclear, and to a lesser extent, hydroelectric. So he switched his whole platform, driven on not altruistic means, but because he wants his company to grow and prosper. We had Facebook buy an entire power plant specifically for the purposes of feeding electricity to their computers to try and stay competitive in AI.
Okay. I want to come back to AI. I was in a very brief seminar concerning AI, and I walked out of there. I'm telling you, my brain was smoking. I just couldn't almost take it all in. So it is. Right. It's definitely on top of us. It's a big deal, and there's a lot to be happy about, and there's a lot to be concerned about. But let me stick with the Middle East just for a moment.
Sure.
The president is now saying to Zelensky to concede more territory to Russia in order to bring about a peace deal. My question is, this is after he said that Russia would have to give back the land that they have taken from Ukraine. And in the meantime, Zelensky's own administration has got caught with its hands in the cookie jar.
No question. $100 million.
Now what?
Well, I'll tell you, when I first heard that story, let me tell you what the first thought of my brain was. How much of that $100 million went to Hunter Biden and Joe?
I don't know. Wow.
Nobody's asked that question yet, but I see it coming. The Republicans are going to look at this and say, no, wait a minute. They want an accounting of that $100 million or more, and how are the Bidens going to cover that? So I think there's remember, he had Burisma. He was on the board of a Ukrainian energy company, drawing $50,000 a month for sitting in the chair when he was there. So it's a situation where what Trump is trying to do is I believe this to be true, sir. He is a man who is concerned about the murder, the death, the persecution of what's going on between these two countries over this ground. And he's talked about now giving long-range missiles to Ukraine that would be able to reach the military infrastructure of Russia. And I think he's using that as a way to try and get both parties to the table. What's here, again, it's economics. I hate to be redundant, but it really is. What Trump wants is he wants peace. He wants the killing to stop, and he wants prosperity to come back to Ukraine. And we signed the rare earth agreement. We want to start harvesting that. Diminishes our need to deal with China. So there's lots of reasons. So whatever he can do to try and bring peace to the region, if we get to peace in the region, under the Iranian constitution, there has to be a general election. And the vast majority of people who follow that say that Zelensky's not going to get reelected president. So there's going to be a new regime. And so all of these things are pieces to the puzzle that are important to follow. But I think that to get back to the core of your question, Trump is reacting to the reality of the moment.
Okay, so has trust been rebroken with Zelensky because of this administration scandal?
I think that there are a lot of people who have, myself included, who have written commentaries about the corruption in Ukraine. To what extent Zelensky was involved in it, not much is known at the moment. But the oligarchs in Ukraine clearly have manipulated the money and taking it for themselves. So I don't know. At the moment, I think he's being cautious about not accusing Zelensky as a participant in the corruption, because I don't think he has enough information to make that statement and make it stick.
And then the other part of that equation, Dan, is why has Putin been so provocative when his own economy is so weak and he's got problems at home and he's got a military that is not sophisticated, and yet he is so provocative with drones and intimidation and flying airplanes close to even our international waters up in Alaska? Why is he doing this?
I think he's trying to intimidate Trump and the United Nations and NATO and the European Union. He took a huge hit. If you recall, when Trump signed the deal with the president of the European Union for $750 billion worth of energy over the next 3 years, oil and natural gas coming into Europe to replace that $750 billion that came from Russia. And recent stories are that oil and natural gas is already shipping into Poland and to Greece and being processed. And what's interesting to me is they're using the pipelines that the Russians built, shut it off in Russia, and are flushing the pipelines with energy from the United States.
Okay. Let me switch gears on you a little bit.
Okay.
Why was the president so anxious to get the Epstein trial files out?
Good question. I really believe he played the Democrats. And you and I had talked several shows ago about what you're talking about today. I raised the issue, and I wasn't the only one. A lot of commentators have raised the issue. Biden was the one, his administration was the one that went after Epstein. And they had all the paper, all the documents, all the files, emails, everything. Yet in the entire remaining period of time in Biden's tenure as president, up to the time before he decided he wasn't going to run, they had the ability to leak whatever they wanted about Donald Trump if he was involved in what was going on. They didn't. There was no evidence that they could bring forward from all the stuff that they collected to implicate Donald Trump. So Donald Trump knew that he wasn't involved. So he let the Democrats dig the hole. And they kept on digging. You may have seen the story yesterday, Jasmine Crockett, who was at a House hearing claiming that Epstein gave money to the campaign of the Secretary of Transportation and other campaigns. And the secretary said, I believe you're wrong. Go to the Federal Elections Commission, and yes, you will find an Epstein who gave money to my campaign. But it was Dr. Epstein, no relation to the pedophile. So he embarrassed her, and he embarrassed the Democratic Party, because they didn't check the facts. They just blew out something, hoping that it would stick, and it would stick on Trump. And it didn't. And they paid a price for that. So he set the trap. They bought the bait and ran with it. And then he set the line and hook and pulled him back in. And he had him, and they were embarrassed.
One quick question before I take a break. So where does this eventually lead? I mean, do we really care about this? I mean, this is just
Epstein.
Well, it just seems to be such salacious tabloid baloney, you know.
What they used to call in the old days before you and I were born, yellow journalism. Hmm. And yes. I mean, do I want to spend my time? The Democrats, do I want to spend my time dealing with Epstein or trying to figure out how we're going to deal with health care. They would much rather deal with Epstein and then buckle down and to admit that their Obamacare was a failure.
Yeah.
And admit that.
All right, let me take a quick break.
Yeah, we're spending way too much time on it and money.
All right. I think we already know that people are caught in that web, and it's embarrassing, and it's bad, and they're starting to resign even before the report comes out, and it's just going to get worse. Anyway, just such tabloid journalism. All right, let me take a quick break. Let me say to our viewers and listeners, check out Dan's website, danperkins.guru. Songs and Stories for Soldiers.us, a good time to support him as he helps so many veterans during this time of the year. And then check out his soft side, romantic novel, better known as Sad Eyes. There's a picture of the cover of the book. We'll be right back.
This is Dan Perkins, the author of Sad Eyes, Book 2. In Book 1, we watch her grow up and develop into an intelligent, practical, and beautiful woman. She knows what she wants to be, and she will not let anything happen that will stop her from reaching her goal. Book 2 has many challenges she faces during World War II. People say it's hard to put down. You can get Sad Eyes Book 2 at Amazon.com or JanCarrollPublishing.com and ask at Jan Carroll for a special deal if you buy both books.
Okay, welcome back. Dan Perkins is with us. Always great to have him around. He's a political commentator, host of What's on My Mind podcast, so check that out. I think you'll find it to be very resourceful. And a couple of places, danperkins.guru is the website, Songs and Stories for Soldiers.us, another great opportunity to help him as he reaches out and ministers to soldiers and veterans. And his series of historical romantic novels, Sad Eyes, and there's a picture of the cover of the book. Dan, the president's rating seems to be slipping, and it's primarily linked to the fact that the price of bread really has not come down. Secretary of Defense says, hang on, first and second quarters are going to really be booming. What's your take?
I agree. Price of eggs are down 30%. Price of gasoline is down. There are other commodities that are down. I think what you're seeing in the polling data is the hype from the Democrats, which is kind of ironic that they're talking about it, that the prices haven't come down, but they come down from the level that Joe Biden took them to. So, I think that there's some discontent, but I think it's the shutdown was difficult for a lot of people. And people didn't get their SNAP money or weren't going to get it. And there were a lot of negative press about the shutdown with the military not getting paid and the agents not getting paid and the FBI and all of that. People weren't getting paid. But if you look at it and say, okay, it was a bad thing, what did the Democrats gain by keeping the government closed? Nothing. And now we have a split commitment. We have the majority leader in the Senate, Mr. Thune, who said to the Democrats, we will bring health care to the table in December. And we had a Speaker of the House, Johnson, say, not in the House. So I don't think this healthcare thing is going to get resolved. So the question that on the table is, are we going to go into a shutdown again at the end of January? Very possibly. Because if we don't get things going, we can't continue to operate on 30-day budgets. It's like putting the employees of the government as a yo-yo, up and down, up and down, up and down. And I think the American people understand that. I saw polling yesterday that hold both Democrats and Republicans and the White House equally liable for the shutdown. But I think that the economy is looking like it's going to take off here. And if we From a political standpoint, Perry, in a political campaign, you want the economy recovering before the midterm election, not after. So Trump is going to do everything he possibly can to affect prices. And he did that by lifting some tariffs on coffee and other things, bananas, that are not material to trade but are important to the American consumer. So I think they're doing things, and I think we will see some pickup in the fourth quarter of this year, but significant pickup in the first and second quarter of next year, just before the midterms.
So what if I'm hearing you correctly, it's possible that when this whole health care issue comes up again, primarily the subsidies for Obamacare as it relates to giving health care to illegals,
yes,
even though it would get voted down in the House, it would go back to the Senate, and that's where it gets stuck because they need 60 votes in the Senate. So we could be right back where we are again. Am I hearing
you? Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Boy, don't you know that's going to be a can of worms. Wow.
Oh, no question, no question. And the reality is, if you look at Obamacare, it's a purely Democratic deal. Only Democrats voted for it. No Republicans voted for it. It was a Democratic deal. But let me talk about a piece of confusion, because it's very important when we're talking about health care. What you just said is health care. We're dealing with health care. The Obamacare discussion isn't about health care. It's about whether or not the government is going to spend trillions of dollars paying for free health care insurance, big difference, insurance for the people under the Obamacare thing. So what's going on, the Democrats are purposely confusing the American people between health care and health insurance, and they're mixing them together. They're saying 49 million people in this country are without health care. That's a lie. Even an illegal alien has health coverage in the sense that they can walk into any emergency room in the United States, regardless of their legalness or anything else, and get health care. And so can every citizen of the United States. Now, it's the most expensive form of health care, and it's not the way to treat people. But to say that we have no, that we're going to lose health care is a lie on the part of the Democrats. We're going to not fund a Democratic boondoggle that's cost us trillions of dollars.
Why can't we zero in on the hypocrisy that the so-called Affordable Health Care Act needs subsidies to stay alive?
I go back to the beginning on this. And when I talk about this, which I do, I said, just remember these three things. This is what the President of the United States told the American people over 20 times, and was reported to be the lie of the century. If you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. If you like your plan, you can keep your plan. And it's probably going to save the average family of four $2,500 a year.
Yeah.
Every one of those things was a lie.
Yeah. All right.
Never happened.
One other quick question before I run out of time. Mamdani and the president want to meet. Whoa.
Yes.
What's your take on this one?
Well, I think Donald Trump is trying to say to the country, I'm willing to listen to anybody. I may not necessarily agree with him, but I want to find out what he or she is thinking and what they believe, and find out and probably test him to see how strong he is about some of his. I mean, there's a wonderful cartoon this past week on Fox News. There's a woman standing in a doorway of a house, and a man's got a gun on a woman, and she's crying and screaming. And the caption over the woman standing in the doorway says, it looks like somebody needs a hug.
Oh, yeah.
That's not going to solve the problem of the guy with the gun. But that's what the perception is in some areas of what Mamdani's trying to do, is replace the police with social worker in New York City. Not going to work. So he wants to find out just how serious this guy, his rhetoric is. Does he really believe what he's talking about? And if he does, and he gains an insight into him and what he wants to do. It gives him the basis on which to plan an attack on what he wants to do against New York City.
There's some obvious things here is that the mayor just doesn't have the power or the resources to provide everything he wants to do. So his campaign and reality, there seems to be a huge gap. I'm wondering if the president's goal is to kind of educate him on that gap.
It could be, but I think he understands what his powers are limited, and he's still proselytizing about what he wants to do. But he's also doing this. He's saying, they did it. They did it. Not me. They did it.
Yeah.
So if he can't get it done, it's not his fault. It's Hochul, the governor of the state, or whoever are responsible for not allowing him to achieve what he wants to achieve.
So he wants to fix a problem that his own party created.
Yes. That's the Democratic way. Create a huge problem. You create it. You march in on your white horse. I can save you. But you got to spend billions of dollars, but it doesn't save us.
All right. Dan, you're fascinating. Hey, one quick thing. Tell our viewers and listeners, remind them what Songs and Stories for Soldiers does.
Songs and Stories for Soldiers is a foundation that my wife and I put together 12 years ago dealing with veterans, and specifically veterans with traumatic brain injury, post-traumatic stress disorder, sleep deprivation, which is the most dangerous, and then suicide. We're in 238 facilities that treat veterans across the country. We've given away almost 24,000 of our MP players free. And we have a website, songsandstoriesforsoldiers.us, that has tremendous content, all free for veterans.
Well, let me encourage our viewers and listeners to check it out, because the result of him providing these resources, and in particular the music that he provides on these players, has been therapeutic at a level that is to be admired. So check it out, songsandstoriesforsoldiers.us. There's a picture of the landing page. Thank you, Dan. Good to see you, buddy. We need you. Stay in there.
It's always a pleasure.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. Take care. Bye.